Spike Eskin, Ike Reese, along with Jack Fritz, and our friend and Eagles Insider of the Year contestant, Elliot Shoreparks, who is brought to us by BQ Basements and Concrete, foundation repair, basement waterproofing, and crawl space experts. Call today for a free inspection. To book your appointment, go to basementsbybq.com. Elliot, before we get into the press conference itself,
yes.
Obviously we've been discussing, and at some point on the show this week, we will reveal the first official rankings of power rankings of Eagles Insider of the Year.
Yes.
How important is it to you? And then B, where do you think you stand within the field before we get the first ranking?
I mean, look, I think Howard Eskin is one of the best Eagles reporters of all time. So even to be in the running with him, and some say ahead of him, is really, I mean, it's huge for me. So I learned a lot from Howard. I listened to him growing up. So to be on the same level with him, to do that, it's awesome. And we'll see how the rest of the year goes.
So before we get to the press conference itself as well, we were talking about how many questions you asked. I thought I heard two.
I was the first one.
Yeah. So Jack mentioned you were the first.
Yes.
Somebody on this show, me or Ike or Jack, noted that maybe you were given the first question because they knew it would be a softball.
No. So here's some behind the scenes.
Okay.
If anyone's listened to Eagles press conferences, you know that there's a lot of yelling, and you have to yell and get your question in.
Yeah.
Me, as a veteran and one of the Insider of the Year candidates, I know if I go first, I'll definitely get my question. I'll have to yell over all these people. So when they sit down, as a veteran move, I jump right in there.
Okay. And there's not other –
But there's other people that want to have the first question.
Well, then they should ask it.
No, I don't want to – Don't get defensive. I'm just trying to go through the process.
I'm just questioning your dignity.
Well, I'm wondering why do they go to you first?
Well, that's what I'm saying. They don't go to me.
Do they not choose who they're going to go to with the question?
No, they don't. When they sit down, there's a silence of, all right, here we go, and whoever jumps in first goes. Later in the press conference, you're right, Howie does go, I'll go you and you.
But that's what I'm talking about.
But that's because everyone's yelling at the same time. So he goes like, I hear everybody, I'll do you, you, and you. The first question is just whoever jumps in.
You're just ready to go.
Well, yeah, look, I have a bit of a quiet voice. I want to make sure I get it in there first.
I mean, you would think with all the big J's down there.
Sure.
I mean, Elliot, I don't even know if they really even consider him still being a big J. He's such a radio
guy.
Many
are asking, yeah.
Down
there, I agree.
That's what I'm saying. Do the other scribes sort of respect you like that? They let you go first?
Well, they didn't let me go first. I went first.
Ooh.
Does Jeff McClain stand in the back, passive-aggressively thinking, tweeting about
comment.
You?
Okay.
So, do you think Elliot was given the first question because they knew it would be a softball? 215-592-94.
This could be Jack's next poll question. Yeah. I'm sure everybody will
Jack,
vote.
Could you put that
No. It's okay.
Twitter. Okay.
It's okay. Yeah.
So what did you – forget about overall because it was mostly 75% of it was blah, 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 blah,
right.
blah, blah. He got specifically defensive, Howie Roseman did, when KYW's Dave Urem asked him about the Hassan Reddick trade. Mm-hmm. What do you think that was about? It was strange.
Yeah, so first let me say, in all seriousness, Urem deserves a ton of credit. He asks great questions at these press conferences. He's had a lot of them. So I give him credit for the question.
Thank you for getting that out of the way first.
No problem. Just
good respect to other journalists.
Exactly. But I say that to say I was surprised because as someone that's been at every Howie Roseman press conference for the past 10 years, he is very, very good at these press conferences. You don't often catch him off guard. You don't often get under his skin. And I was surprised at his answer there. So I do think, probably deep down, Howie knows it was not a popular move. He probably feels like he answered it earlier when he said, we have Nolan Smith, we have Bryce Huff, we brought back Josh Sweat, we have BG. So I just think he was probably not in the mood to defend the move anymore. That's because you never see him look irritated like that. Right?
Yeah.
He's very good, and especially this press conference.
Sure.
This press conference is all about going up there, sending the message you want to send, not revealing anything. And I think that's probably he came in ready for that. And so maybe he didn't feel like explaining Reddick anymore.
Well, I mean, that in itself lends you to believe that there is something that was there that may not have been football related. I mean, what it does is it leads people to speculate. Why was it bittersweet? Why isn't he still here? He was under contract. Like, there was nothing that precluded them from doing all the moves they did and still having Hassan Reddick here.
So
like that, it's still.
I think trading Hassan Reddick was a mistake, And I think
I don't know, we talk.
Yeah. And I think a year from now, there's a chance we look at this trade and go, this was a real reason why the season did not go the way that we all think it could. Because if they don't get pressure on the quarterback, the back seven currently is not good enough to hold up. So getting pressure on the quarterback is arguably like number one, two, and three on defense for making them good.
Sure.
I also think there is a chance that a year from now we look at this and go, wow, they got Bryce Huff, who turned out to be everything they thought. Josh Sweat rebounded. Nolan Smith was a first-round pick for a reason. And they got that draft pick. So my guess is on why Howie got defensive is that he probably has more information about why this was done. And to your point about the speculating, we don't have all the information. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, we can only base our opinion off the information we have. I think Howie makes good trades, so I think he deserves in some ways the benefit of the doubt. But it is so out of character for him to trade a player of this caliber. I understand why people want a more clear explanation as to why it was.
Well, especially if Hassan still doesn't get a new deal in
New
York.
And he still has not gotten a new deal.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think Hassan's going to get the money people think that he was going to get.
Or that he thought he was going to get.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if the Jets were willing to pay him $25 million a year, mm-hmm. he would have that $25 million a year. My guess is if he gets a new deal, when he does, it'll be much closer to the 2019-ish range, and it's going to be 25-26.
We're here with Eagles Insider of the Year candidate Elliot Shore Parks. One
change of Twitter.
Why did you read it like that was an NPR stat?
Yeah, it really did feel that way.
Well, I'm really settling in.
Yeah,
I'm really settling in.
We are here with.
Yes.
Last thing on Reddick. Are you surprised? Clearly, there's something else there. There has to be. Are you surprised that whatever that story is has not come out somewhere?
So I think we know the story. The story is, we saw at the end of the year, the culture in that building was not great. We saw the incident on the field where Hassan and Nick yelled at each other. We talk so often about how this team looked dead on arrival. Now, is that only Hassan's fault? No, of course not. Leadership starts with Jalen, the offense, all those things. But I think the Eagles traded Hassan Reddick for a number of reasons, and I don't think there's a smoking gun we haven't found out. Hassan Reddick wanted a lot of money. They didn't want to pay him for him. He wasn't going to be happy if he didn't get that money, so they traded him to another team. I also think they wanted to switch things up from a culture perspective. And I think that's it. I don't think there was a big fight between Jalen and AJ in the locker room. I'm sorry, Jalen and Hassan in the locker room or any of this big story hasn't come out. I think they wanted to change the culture. And as part of that, they swapped out all their ends besides Josh Sweat, basically.
I hear you say that. And then I'll hear people like the King, mm-hmm. the other Insider of the Year nominee.
One of the others.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'll hear him say that the whole locker room stuff is overblown, that there wasn't anything going on. They weren't a very good football team.
I disagree with that.
No, I'm agreeing with you. I'm just saying, but you'll hear people say that it wasn't anything going on in the locker room. It was just the team wasn't good enough. The players weren't good enough.
Well, where I would maybe agree with that is I think the bad locker room culture was the result of the losing. I mean, in 2022, no one thought Hassan Reddick was maybe an issue in the locker room. And Jalen was the prototype of what we wanted a quarterback. And look how steady-handed he is on the sideline. When you lose, everything's perceived differently. So too many players.
And it also reveals true character.
Yeah, I think that's also true. I mean, look, we did the Players Lounge, the Brandon Graham Show. There was too many times where players talked about the culture in the locker room for me to just sit here and go, that wasn't a problem. I just think it was the result of losing. But you're right.
Listen, when you lose games,
right.
that starts to make people act a little differently because jobs get tight. You know, you start moving coordinators out and certain – I don't even remember if anybody got benched last year. Nobody got benched last year, right?
Besides Desai, no.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Besides Desai, no player did. but to your point, there are things that could transpire – throughout the course of the season. And how about this? Just the Eagles seeing the way certain guys handled that stretch of bad football. I say that reveals true character. Well, some guys stood up. They tried to hold this thing together.
AJ?
Like you had some guys who did that, and then maybe behind the scenes you had guys that were maybe pulling apart or certainly weren't helping to sort of bridge and pull the team together. And the Eagles realized that, and maybe that's why they moved on from certain
guys.
Well,
and this is where I've kind of disagreed with what the Eagles are doing this offseason to an extent, is a lot of their moves have been about culture. We miss C.J. Gardner-Johnson. We really missed what he brought to the building. You know, maybe Hassan is traded because of culture. The culture starts with Jalen Hurts. You can't build a culture with what are – Hassan's more than a role player, but are not main guys. I mean, Hassan Reddick, he is a defensive end. He is not the quarterback of the team. An analogy I'll use, and Spike, I don't know if you follow the Sixers or not, but last year when they had P.J. Tucker, right?
I just listened to Odyssey's number one
exactly,
Sixers
right.
podcast.
Exactly, right. You're welcome.
The rights to Ricky Council.
Yeah. But last year when the Sixers brought in P.J. Tucker, it was, well, he's going to be a dog. He's going to be all these things. At the end of the day, they followed Joel's leadership. Like, they were his personality.
I think and Harden to a degree.
And Harden, yeah, exactly. But it wasn't P.J. Tucker. He could yell at people. He could do those things, and I think he was beneficial. But what happened in Game 6 and 7? Like, he could only do so much. With this Eagles team, the culture is not going to be fixed by trading Hassan Reddick. It's not going to be fixed by bringing Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. It's going to be fixed by the quarterback being a better leader in times of need.
And the quarterback and who's the other person?
The head
who
coach.
Leads that? Right.
But he is a good culture guy.
But I guess my point would be, I don't know that bad cultures happen under good culture guys. And if he's such a good culture guy, why do they take away responsibility for him right after? If you believe in him as a culture guy, that is a bad look.
So you're talking about the Kellen Moore thing. Mm-hmm. I view this differently. I think when Doug fell apart here in 2017, 2018, 2019, they only hired from within, and they had no fresh ideas ever. They promoted Press Taylor. They tried to bring in Scangarillo. That didn't work. But we all saw that thing fall apart because it was stale, and they needed new ideas. I agree that they have taken power away from Nick to an extent with the offense. But I do genuinely view it more as bringing in outside ideas because they saw the last time they were in the Super Bowl how stale it got by backing their own guys repeatedly. So you're right about taking away power, but I think there is a genuine truth in bringing in new ideas to the team.
So we've been talking about the draft, which is obviously the first round Thursday and Friday next week.
Next Thursday, yeah.
I got the draft party, I would assume.
Ike is saying that I am being too safe and he doesn't want the team to be safe by taking a guard on the offensive line. What is your position on that?
I don't think it's safe to take an offensive guard.
Sure it is.
No, I don't think it's safe at all. Why would it be safe?
Well, because it's a position that has less a chance of failing versus a high – what is it? What would you call it?
A high leverage
position like corner where you can get exposed on an island, like at defensive end, and if you're not getting sacks, you can't show how much you are an asset to the team. At tackle, left tackle, right tackle, you're on an island blocking defensive ends. At quarterback, your play obviously speaks for itself. Running back, I would almost say guard is – the position that is the safest position to draft outside of defensive tackle. It's the safest position to draft because you can hide that guy. You can hide his deficiencies. You don't have to actually hit. You won't get judged like taking a corner or a wide out or a defensive end where we're looking for production. All you can do, because we don't grade linemen, and they can tell you how great he is at the offensive line position, this and that and the other. But it's a low impact, low risk. I guess you could say high reward, but it's a low risk position.
High ceiling, low floor type of play.
Yeah.
But so I agree with most of that. And I do think that the offensive guard can benefit from having a great center and a great tackle next to him, probably more than any other position on the field. A corner, mm-hmm. you need great safety play, but ultimately you're on an island more than you are with the offensive guard.
Yep.
To me, though, I don't view it as a safe pick, and I do think they will be under scrutiny, is because it is the biggest need on the team. So to go out –
the biggest need on the team is a guard?
The biggest need on the team is an offensive guard.
Nah.
It absolutely is.
Well, it's not – there's no absolute. It's your opinion.
Yes, yes, in my opinion.
See, it's not an absolute. I don't think it's the biggest.
Well, in my opinion.
Yes.
But the team will only go as far as their offensive line takes them. And right now, the middle of their offensive line is a question mark. So while I get your point that if you take a stud Pro Bowl corner, that helps the team more than a guard does holistically – the Eagles need a guard more than they need a corner.
And there, no, they don't.
You can find a guard.
You can find a guard, just like they have throughout there. Only Landon Dickerson being taken in the second round. They found guards in the third round, fifth round, sixth round. Like, you can find a guard. Where you know where they haven't found a guard? In the first round. That's where they haven't found a guard. In the first round. As a matter of fact, they found one lineman in the first round. So, in the last 15 years, and that's Lane Johnson, who was the fourth pick in the draft. And by the way, he wouldn't have gotten drafted hadn't a dumbass team in Miami traded in front of him and took Deion Jordan. We would have Deion Jordan here, who would have been gone in 2 years.
We all wanted Deion Jordan.
I like Deion Jordan, as did Chip. But what I would say is that if you look at the, let's use cornerback, for example, they have not invested high resources in that position, and they've gotten out.
What do you mean?
Darius Slay, they traded for a third. They got a third-round pick.
Bradbury, how much money they paid Darius Slay?
You mean draft.
You mean draft picks.
Yeah, they have not drafted
resources. When you said high resource, I mean money is resource.
Yes, it is. You're right. Money is a resource. But I think draft picks are more valuable than cap space. So the point I'm making is, in using the offensive line, they've invested big-time draft resources in that position because it's more important. When it comes to the corner, Slay they got for a third. Bradbury they signed as a free agent. Maddox, who's been good when they've needed him, what was he, a fourth or fifth-round pick? Mm-hmm. C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
Maddox has been good for 1 year.
He's been good for more than 1 year.
Really?
Maybe if you combine all of his games over 4 years, but I'm saying when he's played at a high level. He was good the Super Bowl year. He was
high level.
Yes, high level.
What's the benchmark here for this stuff, man? Like, what high level how?
Well, they
lead the team in interceptions
They had the number one ranked pass defense with him as
when they played a bunch of garbage quarterbacks. Don't make me go over this again.
Well,
we know the quarterbacks they played in 2022. They played a bunch of backup quarterbacks.
And they dominated them. They dominated.
As you should dominate
backup
quarterbacks.
And they did. That's the point I'm
making. That's what they had. They had an all-star defense.
They did. You're right. With Avante at nickel, Slay at corner, and Bradbury. And none of those guys – None of those guys took big resources to acquire. That's my point.
No, my point is that when you bring up Avante, I can say that about any of their linemen. Jason Kelce didn't take high resources.
Right.
Yeah, I could say that about other positions too. I could say that. That's easy to state. What I'm telling you right now is this defense doesn't have enough playmaking players in their stable. And I'm not just talking about for this year. I'm talking about moving forward. The idea of adding somebody that's going to help them win the Super Bowl is already out the window from a starter standpoint. That's out the window. You're talking about drafting a guard. You're talking about drafting a guard. Like, the guard is really – so the guard is going to make them what? They can't find another guard?
You keep saying they'll just find guards. They have. But they found corners. They have found corners. Slay they got for cheap. Bradbury they got for cheap. C.J.
Slay for cheap where?
A third-round pick is what they
paid
for.
Slay.
I know, but I'm talking about using draft resources because you're saying that the use of a guard at 22 is not worth it because you can find them. They have found corners other places without the high draft picks. And in terms of winning the Super Bowl next year, no player helps them get the Super Bowl next year more than a guard.
I got a front row seat to this.
Yeah. This is every Tuesday.
Yeah, I've heard it on the radio.
This is every Tuesday.
Yeah. I've never
The whole guard nonsense, I've never even heard in my life.
Yeah,
This team, with all the talent they have on offense, now if they don't get a guard, they're ruined.
Because the talent on offense doesn't matter if Jalen doesn't have time in the pocket.
So you mean to
tell me last year Jalen escaped the pocket like
so
this.
So a guard is going to solidify it.
It's going to help. It's going to help a lot more than a corner. It's true. The A.J., Saquon, I mean, Saquon knows how important a good offensive line is.
What I'm telling you, Elliot, what I'm telling you is that you don't need to spend a first-round pick
NPR voice
at that position. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
You can
play someone, even if you take a guard in the third round. Be my guest. You're going to get the same level of player. Now, if there's a Landon Dickerson sitting there,
right?
Okay, then show me that there's a Landon Dickerson sitting there that you're taking with this pick.
So I just
fine.
I disagree with you fundamentally that you can just find guards anywhere. You can find players anywhere. Just like look at the secondary, they found players anywhere. They found their franchise quarterback in the second round. Ultimately, at 22, I believe the best pick, A, based off the player, other than a receiver, which is where I really want them to go. But if they're not going to go receiver, an offensive guard is the best high-impact
signing for them. Stop saying offensive guard.
I'm not going to stop saying offensive guard.
Well, it's just a guard.
It is an offensive guard.
Well,
it's not
no
a high-impact position.
It is on this team. I agree fundamentally if we're building a team.
On this team.
Well, it is. We're not drafting like just some random team.
So
we're
defense talking about doesn't matter on this team.
They have defense.
They do?
Yes. There's more talent on this defense than people give it credit for.
Really?
And the best thing they did is bringing in Vic Fangio.
The worst aspect of the team, there's more talent there.
No, they have more talent on offense and defense.
Okay.
But they're not at a point with defense where you have to ignore a gaping hole on offense.
So did they not have the worst passing defense last year?
Yeah, they had the worst
scoring. Did they not have the worst scoring defense?
I don't know where they finished.
You think I'm asking questions?
No, they finished 32.
So then my point is this. How is there so much talent there? Now you're going to tell me because Vic Fangio is there now.
Yes.
You're the same guy who told me that Jonathan Gannon was great.
clearly he was based off last year, because look at the results last year versus the year before with mostly the same guys.
The year before, they played against backup quarterbacks. They played Sam Howells, Daniel Jones.
And look what
they played garbage quarterbacks.
But look what they did against the corners this year when they had better coaching. They shut Mahomes down. They shut Tua down. They shut Mahomes down. They had, what, you have 16 points in that game?
They dropped 6 passes in that game.
I mean, people drop passes. Like, you can't go through every
defense. Wide open guys.
I know. They dropped
them. So they didn't shut anybody down.
But the result is the result. And the result is, even if one of them catches those touchdowns, they're only still at 23 or 24 points.
So the results is all that matter.
Yes.
When the team was 10-1, nobody cared about the results.
That's a good point. Actually.
When the team was 10-1, nobody cared about the results, because it was, look with your eyes. My eyes are telling me they aren't a 10-1 team. So now I'm using that same argument.
But that wasn't me. I don't care if it was you or not.
I'm just saying that there's the people that are listening, so that when they're being influenced by our conversation and you're throwing out results only matter, I want to remind everybody that the results didn't matter to everybody when the team was winning.
I get that. And there are areas they need to improve. I'm not saying their defense is set up to succeed right now. I'm saying offensive guard helps this team more than any other position.
Ladies and gentlemen, Elliot Shore Parks and Ike Reese. I just had a front seat to that. I
mean, it's good to have you back.
This is every week?
Sometimes.
It's about 80% of the time.
I don't have to do anything.
Sometimes it's me and Jack. But
coming up next, Sixers Heat tomorrow.
you'll get your chance with him, too.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Trust me, I have a whole queue of things.
I'll wait until after the draft.
Yeah, I used to respect you as a football guy.
I know. It's a shame.
You're one of the few guys I respect as a football guy.
And I was just about to say, it's such an honor to be on the first Fritz, Spike, and Ike show.
But I guess I'll take that back now. Coming up next, Sixers Heat tomorrow.
It rolls off the tongue.
Sixers Heat tomorrow. We have a myth about Jimmy Butler that I have to clarify next. And is beating the Heat a significant playoff win for the Sixers? New afternoon show, Sports Radio 94 WIP. Ike Reese over there. I'm Spike Eskin, along with Jack Fritz and our favorite Eagles Insider of the Year candidate, Elliot Shore Parks.
I want to earn it. Yeah, that's candidate.
Well,
you have
to earn it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, there's
great
no
competition.
We don't play favorites here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Now, I will say,
He is one of our favorites, though.
So yeah, Jack did ask me, we were down for the City Connect jerseys.
Yeah.
And Jack said, are you willing to put your Insider of the Year status on Devontae getting a deal before camp? And I said yes.
Yeah, but again, that seems like informed speculation.
So here's what I'd say, though.
you either got to report it or don't report it.
Hold on.
Jack was the one that said it was about that, not me. Okay. I didn't come in here and bring that up. I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah, okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
We'll get back
Sounds like he wants credit for the year.
Yeah, he does.
I'm sure that Jack would have brought up that he asked.
You need a PAC. You need a political action committee to spend money on advertising to help get your rankings higher.
I don't think Twitter's going to help with that. No. So I'm going to have to hire someone.
Yeah,
I do not.
Well, actually.
You versus Howard in a Twitter, poll?
I don't know about that one.
Howard's the GOAT.
But Howard's turning into a thirsty voice for Eagles fans. That's what he's turned into.
Well, but Ike just said that about Elliot earlier.
Yeah, I was going to
say. Yeah, well, they're both pivoting for that, too.
Yeah. Well, kind of.
Going the same path. We'll see where it ends up.
So Sixers Heat tomorrow night, play-in game one. Of course, if they win that game, they go into the official first round against the Knicks. If they lose the game, they play the winner of the 9-10 matchup on Friday. And, of course, every time that we play the Heat, I have to listen to just person after person after person whining and crying about the fact that Jimmy Butler is no longer on the team and he's exactly what we need and yada, 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 wah, 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 wah. Couple of things to clear up about the crybaby nonsense about Jimmy Butler. Number one, he was not that good when he was here. I feel like people are conflating Jimmy Butler of the last 2 or 3 years with the Heat with what we had with Jimmy Butler with the Sixers. Jimmy Butler with the Sixers didn't shoot a three-pointer for 6 weeks. Jimmy Butler for the Sixers, everybody talks about how clutch he is. In Game 7 against the Raptors, he had like 15 points. Jimmy Butler with the Sixers was simply not that good, was incredibly disruptive behind the scenes, and was not the sort of player that you risk the future of your franchise for at the time. He did get better, but it is revisionist history to talk about how he was when he was here. The second thing is there was no way they were going to keep him. People talk about they choose Brett Brown over Jimmy Butler. That's not what happened. People talk about they choose Tobias Harris over Jimmy Butler. That's not what happened. They chose Ben Simmons over Jimmy Butler. Now, in retrospect, is that a mistake? Of course.
Of course, yeah.
Of course it was a mistake in retrospect. Now, and I'm lead dog in the don't like Ben Simmons camp, but at the time, it was 2018, whatever it was, 2019, Ben Simmons was still incredibly young, incredibly talented, not only high potential, but high performance at the time.
He was maybe a top 25 player.
He hadn't lost the confidence yet.
Right.
Not at all.
He hadn't done that yet.
So to make the decision at that point to sort of leverage the future of your franchise on 30-year-old, disruptive, pretty good player at the time, Jimmy Butler, over Ben Simmons was impossible. Looking back, would it have been the right call to do it? By the way, that's even debatable, I guess. I guess depending on what happened with Simmons, I guess it would have been the right call. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think the future of what that team would have been is what you think it was, because Jimmy Butler wants the entire offense to run through him. We wouldn't see the Joel Embiid that we see right now with the entire offense running through Jimmy Butler. So, A, it wasn't. It just wasn't realistic, and B, he wasn't the player that everybody thinks he was when he was here. And I think it's revisionist history. On top of that, they're going to beat him tomorrow. Tomorrow is, I know it's just a playing game, and it's not even really the playoffs, but tomorrow's a legacy game for Jimmy Butler, or for Joel Embiid. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that his legacy is solidified if he beats the Heat, but it is part of his legacy. You know, you look in the history of the NBA, and a lot of times players have to sort of get over the hump against a certain team or a certain person. Michael Jordan had to do it against the Detroit Pistons. LeBron had to do it against the Boston Celtics. And eventually, Embiid has to do it against the Celtics and get to the finals and all those sorts of things. But Jimmy Butler is a true enemy of this team. I know he's a friend of Joel, but he's been a playoff killer. He is a quote-unquote friend of him, and he's a guy who wants to beat the Sixers badly. You're talking about a team that has been in the finals two of the last 3 years, a player who has regularly killed people in the playoffs. If Joel Embiid goes out and beats the hell out of the Heat tomorrow night and Jimmy Butler, that means something for who he is. It would be the best team that they've ever beaten in a playoff game.
I agree with. So it was obviously a mistake to get rid of Jimmy. The logic at the time was good, but clearly their job is to make the right decision and they made the wrong one. So it was a mistake. But to your point about tomorrow night, I agree. We can paint the Heat as the A seed. And Jimmy Butler, to me, represents everything the Sixers need to be. Whether Jimmy is actually Mr. Playoff Jimmy, whether they're actually this clutch team, that's their reputation. And they've earned it to a certain extent. The Sixers' reputation is coming up small in big games, Joel shrinking when it matters. I think if you put a poll out there of all NBA fans, who do you want in a Game 7, despite the fact Joel is the far superior player, I think it would be a close poll because of what Jimmy represents. So if they beat Jimmy tomorrow, I think it's a huge emotional boost for this team.
Ike, do you think Joel can do it over Jimmy tomorrow night?
Yeah, I do. I do, and I think he needs to do it. You know, I got on Joel last year. It was one of the few times that, you know, Joel has really irritated me. I thought he allowed Jimmy it was 2 years ago Miami beat us, right?
Yep.
That was 2 years ago Miami beat us.
When he had the broken face.
Yes, yep. I thought he allowed Jimmy to manipulate him and their friendship to take the edge out of the series.
Yeah.
Whereas Jimmy was going for the kill in the series. He had the mental edge, whereas he said he thought Joel should have been the MVP that year and thought he was the best player in the league. And I remember Joel after that series, after one of the games, almost reminiscing about playing with Jimmy Butler and almost saying he wished that he was here.
Yeah.
So that drove me crazy. So I've been on this whole revenge thing against Jimmy Butler, honestly.
Good.
And I think the Sixers need – I think Joel needs to take care of Jimmy tomorrow. They're the better team. It's a 4.5-point spread. Quite frankly, this could be, with a locked-in Joel Embiid, this could easily be a 6-10-point win tomorrow night.
I agree with that real quick. I also think it's completely fair to be terrified of this game. I mean, we have seen this team come up small too many times to not think that 10 minutes into this thing tomorrow, Joel's flat, the Heat are making all their threes, it's really tense. I mean, this is the exact game they lose. Yeah.
Terrified.
But there's no other team I would want to play least in this
spot.
See,
this is the guy you were talking about, Jack. Elliot. He's what? Bringing in. He's bringing in the past.
Yeah, no.
He's allowing that to affect his thought process.
Clean slate. Clean slate.
Can I tell you why you shouldn't be terrified?
Why?
Because it is nut cutting time for Joel Embiid.
Oh, nice. That's gone so well in the past.
But he is or he isn't.
Yeah,
he
no,
is or he isn't. I guess my point is, he's either going to go in and do it. I know this sounds like elementary. He's either going to go in and do it or he's not.
But what do you think is going to happen?
I have no idea.
But I think that's why it's okay to be terrified. He's in what, his 10th year? It's a 10th year, and we don't know if he has it in him to come up in a play-in game versus the AC.
Dude, I'm not about to be terrified of Duncan Robinson and Jimmy Butler. Are you kidding
me? The Heat,
Scary Terry's out of the game tomorrow, which is good.
The Sixers are way better than the Heat. They were way better than the Hawks. They were better than the Raptors. They were better than the Heat when they lost before. So I agree that you're right. If Joel shows up, they could win this game by 10-plus points. I've seen this Sixers team come up too small for me to go into this game confident, especially against a team
that's
known for coming up. But it is as long as Joel's here.
Can I tell you, I've become an anti-LeBron guy, but everybody said
welcome to the dark side.
Thank you.
Yeah, the number
you don't
two
respect greatness,
on this
yeah?
station. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Once you work for WIP and you're an Eskin.
You have to be an anti-LeBron guy. Yeah. He wasn't until he was, right? Yep. He was scared. He was a failure. He choked until he didn't. Dirk Nowitzki was a failure and choked until he didn't. There are a lot of players in NBA history. Paul Pierce. There are a lot of players who couldn't get Kevin Garnett. Now, it wasn't really his fault, obviously, in Minnesota, but couldn't get it done until it could. I agree with you. It is hard to believe that he will because we haven't seen him do it. But I'm just not at the point where I'm going to expect him not to.
So it's not that we haven't seen him do it. It's that there are too many scars there from sitting through games that I get excited for. That I'm like, here we go. This is Joel's big moment. And then 8 minutes in, he's flopping. He looks like deadpanned on the
He's going to do it tomorrow.
I think he probably will. But I just think this idea that we shouldn't be afraid of this game, this is the worst possible opponent for them in this spot.
We'll get back to the phones and back to the Eagles right after Mr. Ike.
Yeah, the guy with the least amount of hair in the building right now.
Yeah.
Man, for years you've
It's
heard.
Not even close, buddy.
For years.
You want me to talk about Dr. Glass?
No, I got it,
okay,
brother.
All right.
You don't need it, by the way. You got a nice head of lettuce over there.
But you never know.
But you've heard Dr. Glass on WIP talking about his amazing services. I just mentioned I'm bald. Forgot to mention how beautiful I am. But not everybody could be so lucky.
You are, man.
That's right. Yeah. Dr. Glatt and the Glatt Group, they know so many people that think hair restoration is a one-and-done procedure, but that's not the case. The Glatt Group, they have restoration treatments to strengthen before you need a hair transplant, as well as options to maintain your existing hair after a transplant, and their newest option is completely non-invasive. No needles, no pain, and no downtime. It's called TED, which stands for trans-epidermal delivery. It's where growth factors are delivered directly to the hair follicles, and both men and women are seeing great results from this procedure. What are you waiting for? Give my friends at the Glatt Group a call, always at the forefront of technology. Call them today, 610-980-4000 or drglatt.com. Again, that's 610-980-4000 or drglatt.com and tell them Ike sent you.
215-592-9494. It's a new afternoon show. Ike Reese, Spike Eskin, along with Jack Fritz. Elliot Shore Parks in with us as he is every Tuesday. We were talking about whether the Eagles should take a guard at 22. Elliot and I say yes. Jack, you're a no, right?
Absolutely.
Jack and Ike, football guy. Jack's going to protest with his 1-year-old son, who's going to play guard instead.
Nice.
If it wasn't. So,
Kenny Picketing outside the NovaCare.
Kenny Picketing. Right. And the press conference as well today with Howie and Nick Sirianni, where Howie got a little prickly at KYW's Dave Uram about asking about Hassan Reddick. Ken from Cinnaminson, you're on WIP.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you today?
What's up, man?
What's up, Ken?
I don't normally get the call in this time slot, so I feel really privileged that it is during Jack's new show, the first day of Jack's
show.
That's really cool. I want to get Ike a little worked up on the draft, but before that, I just wanted to say, if we're talking about Eagles insiders, and Elliot might know this because he's on the morning show an awful lot, I told those morning show guys last September that Hassan Reddick was not going to be an Eagle in 2024.
So. Are you the Eagles insider of the year?
Certainly belongs on the ballot, it sounds like.
Ken from Cinnaminson. Jack, put him on the list.
And And I also told him the day when legal tampering was about to begin, which is an oxymoron, by the way, legal tampering. But
kind of sounds like Howard.
That the Eagles are going to sign Bryce Huff. But okay, but we'll leave that at it. Listen, if Troy Fitano is sitting there at 22, draft to help the Eagles for the next 10 years than any corner that the Eagles could possibly take in that spot. He will start at right guard day one, bump out to right tackle when Lane retires, and it'll do more to solidify the right side of that offensive line for the next 10 years than any corner that they could possibly draft. And as Ike knows, every football game that's ever been played is won and lost at the line.
Oh, right in the trenches, man.
Trenches.
Listen, I love the trenches.
You first, a football guy or not, Ike?
Yeah, I'm a football guy. First of all, don't lock me into the cornerback position. I said that's one of the positions
right.
I would look at. Defensive end, pass rusher would be my first spot I would look at. Chop Robinson is at the top of Ike Reese's draft board at the number 22 spot.
Ugh.
But I would say this, Ken. Here's the thing. I'm not telling you that the guard position isn't important. I don't think it's as important of a need in this year's draft for the Eagles with those first few picks. I just don't. I believe there is a devoid of talent on the defensive side of the ball, especially young talent. And just like you can take a guy and have him sit and learn for Lane or any other position like Cam Jurgens did, you can do the same thing over on the defensive side of the ball. You can do the same thing over on the defensive side of the ball. I'm sorry. I look up at their defensive ends. Josh Sweat's on the last year of his deal. We're begging Brandon Graham. Love you, BG, but we're begging Brandon Graham to come back for another year. We got Nolan Smith, who barely played last year, and if you stood him up next to me, we probably look the same. My 225 looks a little different because it's got a little bit of a belly there with it, but I'm just saying.
I think you could take him.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I ain't fit to play defensive end in this league.
Right.
Right? So
you might have been.
There's
90,
a lot of question marks there when you look at the defensive ends they have on this team right now. Bryce Huff has never been a full-time starter. You're about to trot him out there. So I look at the defensive side of the ball, and you're trying to tell me the offensive guard position is more important than finding someone that could get after the quarterback or, I don't know, slow down these wide receivers in this league? I say you're wrong. In that stance. I just do. I just think a guard is much easier to find.
The WIP Afternoons Twitter poll brought to you by Mark's Jewelers at Afternoons WIP. It's engagement season. Shop the home team at Mark's Jewelers with diamond engagement rings for every budget online at marks-jewelers.com. The question, what would your reaction be if the Eagles take a guard with a 22nd pick? 56% annoyed, 44% happy. Pretty split down the middle. Yeah. Mike in Bucks County, you're on WIP.
Hey, guys, how we doing?
What up, man?
What's up, Mike?
Oh, my goodness. Good to talk to y'all. Spike, you're here.
I'm here. The rumors
Thank
are true.
God. Thank God. I was worried about Jack for a little while there. I had to catch myself. Listen, the Sixers thing.
Yeah.
I agree with everything that we know in retrospect about Jimmy Buckets, but Ben Simmons was clearly not a promising young star at the time when we made that decision. They already knew he was not playing nice with others. He was avoiding all kinds of, you know, controversy and stuff about him shooting. So I had to call in and tell you guys. Yeah. I just think that in retrospect might actually did us a favor, but at the time there's no way you could keep Ben Simmons over a guy that was actually making shots and running up and down the floor.
He wasn't making shots. I mean,
he also dribbled the air out of the ball at the end of Game 7, if
Jimmy,
I remember correctly.
Yeah,
Jimmy did.
Yeah, one moment
compared to four seasons. I mean, I love you guys. I'm just saying.
Four seasons of what? What had Jimmy Butler done up until that point that would lead you to believe that he could take a team to the finals?
For me, it's not about Jimmy Butler. It's about we kept holding on to Ben Simmons.
I agree we held on to Ben Simmons for no good reason. But that's wrong for no good reason. And I got to tell you, I am negative on Ben Simmons, and I think my record would show I've been negative on Ben Simmons for a really long time, but I think you're crazy going back to that point, knowing A, what Jimmy was at the time, and B, what Ben was at the time, and say that they should get rid of 22-year-old Simmons for 30-year-old Butler. I just, and by the way, there's a lot of things that went on, and obviously, like, you know, they haven't totally come to light about what Butler was like on the team at that time. It was just, it was, he wasn't a leader. You know, that wasn't the kind of guy that I think you want around the
team. They actually molded him into being this type of player in Miami. The Heat culture, Pat Riley, Spoelstra down there, like, they had a strong enough structure that Jimmy had to conform.
The one thing, here's a moment I remember with Jimmy Butler.
And it's brought the best out of him.
100%.
Yeah.
And by the way, even physically, I think one of the reasons he doesn't play hard in the regular season and he sort of runs out of the gas as the playoffs sort of go on, I think physically he played a lot of minutes when he was with the Bulls.
Those young days, yeah.
Yeah, I think physically he's probably not where a lot of other stars of his ilk are, at least in terms of how much he can do it. But the one moment I think about that happened in Miami, and if it happened in Philadelphia, it would have... The entire organization would have unraveled, is during a timeout, Eric Spoelstra was arguing with Jimmy Butler, and Jimmy Butler threatened to fight Eric Spoelstra in the huddle. He threatened to fight the coach. Now, that is not me. I'm not saying that is a bad thing about Butler. It's just reality, something that happened.
Well, it's not a great thing about Butler.
But you know what they did? You know what they did? It didn't derail anything.
Mm-hmm.
He stayed on the team. The coach stayed there. And by the way, that's an organizational thing that everybody knows the coach is not going anywhere. Jimmy knows the coach isn't going anywhere. Can't get anything done about that. There's something about Miami, and it's why LeBron left, by the way. One of the reasons LeBron left is because he couldn't dictate what was going to happen with that organization.
Yeah.
And that's a much bigger question about the Sixers. But if Jimmy Butler threatened to beat up Doc Rivers or threatened to beat up
Brett Brown,
or threatened to beat up Nick Nurse, the entire organization would unravel.
Would you ask Pop that question?
Yeah, and you know the thing about that situation, Spike, because I remember it, and I remember commenting on it at the time, and I remember tweeting it, you know, Jimmy with the fake tough guy act, because Udonis Haslam stepped right to him and told him, we don't do that here. I beat your bleepity bleep right here. Like, we don't do that down here. You don't talk to the coach that way, because I remember Spoelstra standing up saying, what, you want to fight me?
Yep, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I add to that, it happened once. It ain't happened again.
Right.
Because you know the Godfather talked to him. When Pat Riley had, because Spoelstra was Pat Riley's guy. And he ain't choosing no player over Eric Spoelstra. That's his guy. And you know what Pat Riley probably told him? You want to be playing in Detroit?
Yeah.
I trade you up out of here in a heartbeat. You do that again. We don't do that down here. And it hasn't happened again with Jimmy Butler.
And that's the concern for me about tomorrow night. The team they're going up
against.
That
toughness. The Heat culture is real. I buy into it.
It pokes at the exact Sixers' weakness.
But that's again.
I know you have to over. I agree. You have to get past it.
If we were in Miami, I'd be nervous. We're at home.
I'd rather play in Miami.
I feel comfort in knowing that after tomorrow night, we are going to know a lot more about everyone.
Yeah.
That I feel comfort in that. So coming up next, two big things. First of all, Vic Fangio has been cornered by someone of note at Philly's batting practice today.
Uh-oh.
Oh,
I think
God.
I might have just, my stock might have gone down.
Someone of note, but even bigger than that, the king of the 5 at 5, the king of the afternoon show, the king of that smaller studio over there, he's back.
Hardest wood I had ever touched.
We've had pause. We've had.
He is back.
We've had months of subpar 5 at 5s. No disrespect to
ever.
Buzz.
We would never do that.
No disrespect to Fran.
I thought that was a compliment.
Tons of disrespect to Fran.
Subpar.
No disrespect to Ben. But
you
the goat,
said it horrible.
The goat is here.
Yes,
and the real 5 at 5 returns next on the WIP Afternoon Show.